Part 5, Chapter 14, 085961, M41, Attica Hive, Paphos. Grigor Mitel set down the lump of ore he had carried up from the bowels of Attica and turned to repeat the journey. He did not know nor care how many times he had done this before, nor did he have any concept of how long he had been doing it for. Under the possession of the plague zombie virus, he merely existed, held somewhere between life and death, to carry out the whim of others. His body had deteriorated during his long months of servitude, but he had not noticed. Fingers were missing on both hands, the skin on his chest had worn through to bone, and the flesh of his cheek was torn, a ragged hole through which his yellowed teeth poked. His clothes, like those of the others who laboured under the curse, were threadbare and frayed, leaving him almost naked. But Grigor did not feel the cold deep down in the mine tunnels. Grigor could no longer feel anything at all. Something brushed past his arm, causing him to stop. He looked to his side to see a woman, though Grigor could no longer distinguish gender, just as he had no gauge of age or race, shamble past him. He looked at her, for a fleeting moment experiencing a rush of recognition. She too stopped, turning to meet Grigor's gaze, their eyes locked, dead stares regarding each other vacantly, until, barely perceptibly, the corner of her mouth turned upwards a fraction. It was a smile, but Grigor could no longer recognize it as such. The moment was cruelly ended by the lash of the overseer's whip, gouging flesh from Grigor's back and snaking out to rip the woman's hand from the end of her arm. Grigor started to move again, not out of fear or pain, but from some base imperative that told him the whip meant move. He stepped over the woman's severed hand, looking down as he did so to see a slim band of metal wrapped around one of the fingers. Grigor no longer knew that the ring signified the union between two lovers, and he no longer knew that it was he who was wed to the woman, or that her name was Catalina. He could not remember that they had met 3 years ago, when she had joined his mining team along with the new influx of settlers from Gaia. He could not remember that the governor himself had presided over their union, or that it had taken place on the feast of the Emperor's ascension, revellers greeting them in the streets of the Hive City and wishing them well for the future. He could not remember that in the weeks before Paphos fell, they were talking of starting a family and of moving to Gaia, where they would work on Catalina's family farm to raise enough money to build a home of their own. He could not remember any of this, because Abaddon's invasion had robbed him of everything he held dear to him, just as it had robbed an entire world of its liberty and its population of their humanity. He heard another noise now, louder than the whip, and he stopped. Everybody stopped. If he still had the faculty for description, he might have described the sound as a high-pitched whine, but he did not. So to Grigor, it was only noise. He looked to the woman, some strange urge compelling him to do so, and she looked back. The noise became something different, and he took his eyes off the woman, not knowing it would be the last time he would ever see her. When he looked up, the sky was on fire. From orbit, the missiles rained down upon the capital of Paphos. The Hive City that had stood for over 5,000 years was reduced to rubble and ash in a matter of minutes. In the wake of Attica's destruction, the fleet turned its attention to the surrounding swampland and jungle, burning away the forestation and evaporating the wetlands, leaving behind a glacéic plain the tanks could use to reach the ruins of the city now that the rains had come again. Azrael had been true to his word about assaulting the city, but stuck just as rigidly to his assertion that it would be on his terms. Despite repeated petitions from Drago, the Supreme Grand Master of the Dark Angels had continued to stall, prosecuting operations against enemy supply lines and concentrations of war machines before committing to the attack on Attica. Strike was torn. Drago's aggressive stance had a lot of merit, and it would have potentially neutered the flow of demons from the damnation cache a lot sooner, but Azrael's approach had virtually eliminated the threat of allies coming to the aid of the invaders now trapped in the tunnels beneath the rubble. It had also allowed fresh Imperial Guard regiments to make their way to the Pandarax system, along with elements of Legio Crucius, who had deigned to send a complement of Warhound Titans to aid in the reconquest of Pythos. On a purely selfish note, Strike had been glad of the extra time to prepare for the battle, as it had given KC time to work on Traitor's Bane and get the mobile fortress operational again. Steam still rising from the incinerated ground, the Hellhammer rolled along at the head of an armoured column, the likes of which had been very rarely assembled since the days of the Horus Heresy. An entire Cadian armour division, supported by two mobile artillery divisions, followed behind the remaining Catachan tanks, along with a similar-sized detachment of Vostroyan tanks. Interspersed among the countless Lehman Russ variants were the pride of any armoured regiment, the super-heavy tanks. Many sported the colours of the Cadians, Catachans and Vostroyans, but by far the bulk of them were in the livery of the 1st Palladius Armoured Company, nicknamed the Thunderers, on account of their exclusive deployment of Baneblades, Doomhammers and other gargantuan armoured vehicles. The only things larger on the battlefield were the Warhounds, striding along at their flanks. In the skies over the tanks and walkers, high above the low-lying fog from the cooking off of the swamps, flew close to 1,000 Valkyries, ready to deliver infantry directly to the front line. At a higher altitude soared the thunderbolts and lightnings of the Imperial Navy wings, alongside the Dark Talons and Nephilims of the Dark Angels. Their brothers waited out in space, ready to drop from the skies when the time was right, but the chapter's entire complement of fighter interceptors and bombers deployed in support of the Imperial Guard. From the command seat of Traitor's Bane, Strike listened in on the vox traffic passing between the regiments, formations being coordinated and reports coming in from forward scouts. With visibility so poor, they were reliant on instruments and the eyes in the sky for navigation, but occasionally agitated messages were exchanged between crews who had inadvertently collided with one another. They were lucky they could communicate at all. Another benefit to Azrael's delay had been the recapture of Hollowfall and an end to the enemy jamming Imperial signals. An insistent beeping sounded from the vox, denoting a Priority 1 incoming transmission. Strike killed all other communications and switched channels.
"Are your tanks in position, Colonel?" came Azrael's voice, crackling over the ancient vox unit.
Strike looked to one of the Auspex operators, who gave him the thumbs up.
"Yes, Lord Azrael, we'll be able to begin bombardment as soon as you are on the ground."
"Very well. Commencing deployment now."
The battle for Attica had finally begun. Balthazar swung his blade, paring open the belly of the demon leaping at him. The thing crashed to the ground with a wail, fading from reality before it had a chance to bleed out. He slashed again, taking the heads from a pair of pale svelte things with malformed claws in place of hands. They too disappeared, leaving no trace of a corpse behind.
"Save some for the rest of us, brother," said Gabriel, fighting at Balthazar's shoulder.
The company master of the Deathwing blazed away with his Stormbolter, allowing the younger Dark Angel to pick off any Neverborn that got too close to them.
"Why don't you tell that to them? There'll be no glory left for anybody else at the rate they're eliminating these things."
Dragging his blade through the torso of a minor plague demon, he finished the motion by directing his sword tip to a group fighting several hundred meters away. Resplendent in their pristine silver Terminator armor, a squad of Grey Knight's paladins put the enemy to rout with their witch flame. Balls of white-hot fire launched from their fists, like heavy flamers given human form, but the devastation wrought by their psychic assault was far in excess of any mere weapon. Those caught by the full blast of the attack were incinerated instantly, ghoulish white outlines of their forms forever etched upon the ground. Even those on the edge of the blast area died quickly, the smallest flame soon spreading and engulfing the larger demons arrayed against the Imperial forces.
"If only we'd had a few of those at 2761/B, then perhaps our losses would not have been so great," Gabriel said, taking aim at a demon before blowing it apart with two well-placed shots.
"That sounds like sedition to me, Master, questioning the tactics of the Supreme Grand Master,"
Balthazar teased. While their structure followed the Codex Astartes almost to the letter, 10 companies, First Company granted Terminator armor, 10th Company being the Scouts, the Dark Angels operated unlike any other Space Marine chapter. Their first company, the Death Wing, went to war exclusively in their Terminator armor, and it was always painted bone white, in contrast to the green and black armor of their brethren in the other 9 companies. They were also privy to the chapter's darkest secrets, and among others of the Death Wing at least, were able to share their thoughts on all matters openly. Lord Asriel and I have already had a full and frank debate about the merits of his tactics that day, Balthazar. Each battle, be it a victory, loss, or grinding stalemate, teaches us all something, even the Supreme Grand Master. The day we stop learning is the day the apothecaries apply the reductor to our corpses. Gabriel ceased firing, waiting for his weapon to reload. One of the pink-horned abominations saw an opportunity and leapt at the Dark Angel from his blind side. Gabriel brought his weapon up in a vicious arc, snapping the thing's neck with a sickening crack. "Besides, I think you're jealous." His weapon barked to life.
"Jealous? In what way?"
Balthazar asked. "I've seen the way you revel in the kill, the controlled fury with which you strike down our foes. You live for battle, Balthazar, and constantly seek better ways to wage war. Your body is already a finely tuned killing machine, but you know how much more you could achieve if your mind was as potent a weapon too." Balthazar said nothing, instead bringing his own storm bolter to bear and ploughing through a throng of demons, chopping away with a sword in his other hand, leaving Gabriel wondering whether he had hit a nerve. In the troop hold of the Stormraven, Zula watched the picked feed of the battle taking place on the ground below. Hundreds of thousands of Imperial Guard marched across the plain of glass, as many of the regiments had named it, towards the ring of steel formed by the Imperial armour. With the tank bombardment as cover, they would soon move up to relieve the Dark Angels and Grey Knights' forces already engaged with the demonic horde, allowing the Space Marines to breach the tunnels beneath Attica and take the war underground. The entirety of the Dark Angels' 10th Company had infiltrated the tunnels over a week ago, and accompanied by Castellan Crow of the Grey Knights and a squad of purifiers, had sealed off all routes from the Attican Underhive to the surface, bar one. The largest tunnel had been left open to allow the Titans and tanks access to the subterranean battlefield, the big guns needed to handle whatever horrors the enemy kept lurking in the depths. Thoughts of the Underhive led Zula to wondering about Epimetheus and Shira and what fate had befallen them. The Grey Knight never had any intention of joining up with the main reconquest force for reasons Zula believed she had figured out, but Shira's failure to reappear was a puzzle to her. The Helldrake she was seemingly obsessed with had been spotted all over Pythos, and the junior interrogator thought the pilot would have jumped at the chance to get in the cockpit of a Navy flyer and renew the duel. She had a suspicion they had not been idle. Uncorroborated reports had been coming in to Imperial Command for months of a mysterious silver ghost coming to the aid of besieged strongholds, appearing as if from nowhere, or as one report, dismissed on account of the eyewitness's lack of sobriety, put it, out of an invisible spaceship at the 11th hour and helping to fight off the attackers. "To arms, brothers," said Drago, taking his eyes from the same picked screen Zula had been watching and locking his helmet in place. The other 5 Grey Knights sat in the troop compartment did likewise. Zula fastened the last 2 clasps on her new body glove and checked over her plasma pistol, augmetic arm whirring gently as she did so. "Lord Asriel has kept you in orbit and out of the battle thus far for fear you would shame his Dark Angels." Drago stood up. The other Grey Knights did likewise. The timbre of the Stormraven's engines altered as it commenced its vertical descent. Still several metres from the ground, the rear hatch descended, and Drago moved to the rear of the hold. "Let us now make his fear manifest," he said, leaping from the back of the hovering troop carrier. The 5 other silver-clad Terminators followed him down, each one slamming onto the superheated ground below, shattering it like porcelain. Zula was the last one out of the Stormraven, waiting for it to get closer to the ground before leaping out and landing in a forward roll, pistol raised. she instantly squeezed off a shot, making ruin of a crimson dog-like creature waiting to pounce upon her. Gunfire from behind her cut down the rest of its pack, and she turned to see Imperial Guardsmen charging through the gaps in the tank formation. She could not suppress a smile when she saw it was the Catachans at the head of the charge, their jungle-green attire taking on an orange hue in the light of airbursts and cannon flare from the artillery. In a manoeuvre that looked like it had been choreographed, the Dark Angels and Grey Knights disengaged from the demonic foes and pushed on towards the only remaining entrance to Attica, while their human allies vacated the gap they had left. The Ring of Steel broke apart, scores of Leman Russ moving in to supply armoured support to the guardsmen, while the super heavies rolled in after the Space Marines, mowing down any foe too slow to get out of their way. The artillery continued to shell the area leading to the Underhive, clearing the path of demons for the Space Marines to pass unhindered. Missile batteries launched volley after volley at the airborne horrors, any they missed being picked off by circling Valkyries and Thunderhawks. Behind Imperial lines, more shuttles and troop landers deposited guardsmen onto Pythos before speeding back up to the fleet to repeat the process. Where Catachans, Cadians and Vostroians already engaged the forces of Abaddon, troops from Krieg and yet more Cadians swelled their ranks. For the first time since the War for Pythos began, the forces of the Imperium outnumbered those of Chaos. It would not last long. Struggling to keep up with the massive strides being taken by Drago and his brothers, Zula had to break into a sprint, swinging her pistol from side to side, jetting plasma at anything unnatural that stepped within range. The Space Marine Vanguard had already reached the vast opening that led down to the mines beneath the former Hive City and were engaged in fierce combat with the entities still emerging from the depths. Azrael was at the head of the Dark Angels and quickly renewed his battle bond with his Grey Knights opposite number, the two Supreme Grandmasters picking up from where they'd left off at 2761/B and throwing themselves into the fray with ruthless abandon. The surge of demons from below was relentless, and though the combined chapters butchered many, it was not without cost. A Knight of the Flame found himself cut off from the rest of his squad, surrounded by bloodthirsty canids, not unlike those Zula had already encountered. His psychic abilities having no effect on the cornate hounds, both his flesh and soul were devoured within their fangs before his brothers struck the beasts down in their vengeance. Nearby, a Dark Angel sergeant in the black of the Ravenwing succumbed to the rampage of a demonic chariot, its hideous rider chanting from a blasphemous tome atop a spiked disc drawn along by a pair of noisome serpents on a wave of warp flame. Trying to outrun the infernal vehicle on his bike, the chariot drew alongside, slamming into the Dark Angel and bucking him from the saddle. Before he had a chance to react and lift himself from the ground, the two screaming horrors bathed him in flame, turning him to nothing more than a pile of ash in an instant. Too fast for the Ravenwing, his murderer could not outrun the tank shell that blew it to pieces while the Space Marine's corpse was still afire. New combatants started to flood the battlefield from the tunnel mouth, a trickle that quickly became a surge. Moving slowly, their collective consciousness under the sway of a higher power, plague zombies joined the throng of demons, the undead soon outnumbering the living. Whereas the thralls Zula had encountered many months earlier in Attica had been benign, these possessed a malevolent aspect, clawing and biting at anybody who got in their way. Individually, it was a simple matter to avoid them, but packed together tightly in packs, it was almost impossible to escape their clutches. Thousands of guardsmen fell to the horde only to be reborn immediately as mindless soldiers intent on killing their former comrades. Grey Knights and Dark Angels, too, went down under the weight of numbers, armour torn away to allow the plague zombies access to the flesh beneath. Mercifully, the genetic enhancements that protected Space Marines from disease in life continued to function in death, preventing their corpses from reanimating and turning on their brothers. The tanks turned their guns on the largest concentrations of undead, a ceaseless fusillade ripping open the walking cadavers and tearing up craters into which the mindless slaves fell, clambering over each other in their attempts to scale the sheer walls. Those not killed, who lost limbs or other body parts from the blast, simply carried onwards, crawling in some cases where legs had been blown off. The only ones that stayed down were those who had suffered cranial injuries or lost their head altogether. In the space of a few minutes, hundreds of thousands of plague zombies spilled out of Attica, the flow showing no signs of abating. In among them, larger figures emerged, firing upon the loyal space marines from behind a wall of the undead. Seemingly unnoticed in the melee, the plague marines killed almost at will, the little return fire they did receive soaked up by their shields of rotting flesh. But Zula noticed them, just like she noticed the taller shape at the rear of the horde, giving out orders and guiding his slave army. Casually shooting the head from a plague zombie, Zula set off in the direction of her new target, muttering a single word under her breath. Corpulax. 085961, M41, Piraeus Stronghold, 4,218 kilometres northeast of Attica, Pythos. Shearer squeezed off her final shot, the las pistol power pack dying along with a cultist she had aimed for. His body slumped to the ground alongside the seven others she had picked off from her vantage point on a ledge several metres above the tunnel. She ejected the spent cell and slammed another one home before dropping to the ground in search of new targets. Further down the mineshaft, Epimetheus finished his duel with the final Black Legionnaire, his force halberd bifurcating the traitor marine with a wail of sparking energy and the wrench of tearing bone. The two halves of the ruined body had not ceased twitching by the time Shearer caught up to the Grey Knight. "Is that the last of them?" Shearer asked, swinging a boot at part of the corpse and kicking it derisorily. Epimetheus knelt down and rifled through the pouches and containers strapped around the dead traitor marine's waist. He pulled out a couple of grenades and a handful of bolt shells, adding them to his own kit. "That's the last of anyone. I'm not detecting any signs of life. No presences registering in the warp." Confirmation, not that either of them needed it, came when they entered the next cavern and found the hold's defenders dead at the mine face, a desperate last stand that had come to nothing. The bodies of hundreds of Cadian white shields, boy soldiers pressed into the service of the Emperor, lay intermingled with those of the miners, few of them any older than the Imperial Guardsmen they had died alongside. They had given a good account of themselves, the lifeless forms of scores of dead cultists attested to that, but their defence had been doomed to failure because of the presence of traitor Astartes among the aggressors. It was an all-too-familiar sight to Shearer and the Grey Knight. For months they had been operating across the north of Pythos's main continent, responding to distress calls from Imperial Guard and militia units coming under attack from enemy raiding parties. Rather than concentrate his forces on one coordinated offensive against a single Delver stronghold, Abaddon had instead opted to launch smaller assaults against clusters of mines, synchronized so that the Imperial forces garrisoned there could not come to each other's aid. The strategy had been ruthlessly effective. For every stronghold Epimetheus and Shearer made it to in time to aid its defence, two more would be lost. With the battle to retake Attica underway, there would be no reinforcements to bolster the Imperial Guard, and despite the War Master teetering on the verge of defeat in the War for Pythos, he could still strike with impunity in the north. Grimly, Shearer and Epimetheus set about piling up the bodies, ready for burning.
"So, what are you going to do when all this is over?"
Shearer's question caught the Grey Knight off guard. Her chatter was ordinarily banal, often centred around asking him if he had met specific figures from the Age of the Horus Heresy, or about space marine bodily functions, or lack thereof.
"I mean when the war is over," she added,
hacking her way through the thick undergrowth as they made their way back to the shuttle.
"If all that you and Zula have told me is true, the war is never over. The Imperium of Man is in a constant state of conflict. There will always be battles to fight,"
Epimetheus answered, hoping that would be the end of it.
"That's not really an answer," she smirked. "Do you plan on rejoining your chapter, or are we going to keep our double act together? The Silver Ghost and his daring sidekick flying around the galaxy, coming to the aid of those who need it most."
Epimetheus reached out in front of them, grasping a low-hanging bough that was barring their way, and tore it from the trunk of the mighty redwood as if it were nothing more than a twig.
"It is no longer my chapter. In some regards very little has changed, but the Imperium has moved on in the last 10,000 years. I am a man out of time, a throwback. I probably have more in common with Abaddon than I do the modern space marine." He stared off into the distance, almost wistful. "When the enemy is driven from the face of Pythos and the damnation cache has been resealed, I plan to leave here and make my way into the maelstrom. I shall take the fight to the enemy and do what I was bred to do."
"I knew you'd keep our little team up going," Shira said, coming to the shuttle they had left cloaked beneath a gargantuan tree, its trunk as wide as the shuttle was long.
Epimetheus punched in a string of numbers onto a barely visible external keypad. The camouflage faded away to reveal the sleek black hull of the craft, its side hatch slowly dropping to the ground to form a boarding ramp. Shira made to climb up it, but Epimetheus halted her.
"It is something I must do alone. The maelstrom is a deadly place, littered with demon worlds that make Pythos look like a pleasure planet. Without the correct psychic wards in place, its denizens would tear your soul apart as easily as cast eyes upon you. A simple las pistol would be no defence there."
Shira looked as if she'd just taken a punch to the gut. Though he could read minds, reading people had never been one of Epimetheus's strengths. In the months he had spent around the pilot, he had learned one way of dealing with her, however.
"But you are a very good shot with it," he said. "Almost as good as you are a pilot."
"Yeah? Well, you're a lousy liar,"
Shira sniggered, climbing up the boarding ramp.
"And besides, don't think you'll be rid of me any time soon. There's still plenty of war left on Pythos."
Her point was punctuated by the crackle of the vox.
"This is Lieutenant Korbinev of the Cadian 99th. Morren's hold is under attack. I repeat, Morren's hold is..."
The panicked voice drowned in a sea of static.
"See?"
Shira said, strapping herself into the pilot's seat. 5 minutes later, the Silver Ghost was airborne, racing south to do what he was bred to do. 085961, M41, Attica Hive, Pythos. Zula was not the only one to notice Corpulax's presence on the battlefield. Carving through the plague zombie horde, one of the Deathwing had also spotted the Plague Lord and was making his way to engage him. In their ivory Terminator armour, each of the Dark Angels' first company looked alike, except for those who forewent helmets. Zula had been trained by some of the finest analytical and observational minds at the Ordo Malleus's disposal, and, being more than a casual observer, had noted the positioning of the three purity seals running along his left greave on the sole occasion she had met this particular Dark Angel. His name was Balthazar. Not that it mattered. She would reach Corpulax first and avenge Dinalt's death. Coming up on the traitor's blind side, she took aim with a plasma pistol and pulled the trigger while still several metres away. Instead of taking his head off as she'd intended, her shot struck two of the ever-shifting mass of thralls who got in the way. Corpulax turned to find the source of the attack. When his eyes found Zula amongst the press of undead flesh, he gave a sickly, wet grin.
"I had a feeling we would meet again, you and I,"
he said through a throat full of mucus.
"You took what is rightfully mine, and I demand to have it."
Instinctively, Zula looked down at the knife tucked into her belt.
"Have you really been so foolish to keep it on you? Deliver it right into my grasp."
With a gesture, he parted the plague zombie standing between them, giving him a clear view of the junior interrogator.
"Yes, you have, and saved me the trouble of torturing you for its location. Bring it here, girl, and your death will be swift. Make me fight for it, and you'll beg me to kill you 1,000 times over before I allow you to die."
"It'll be sticking between your ribs before that day ever comes. This is for my master."
Zula fired again, but Corpulax countered with another gesture, moving the plague zombies back into her line of sight. Broiled necrotic flesh and limbs tumbled to the ground.
How very touching. You seek to avenge Dinalt's death. You've been spending too much time around these dark angels. Vengeance blinds them, too.
The Plague Lord's bolter barked to life, forcing Zula to dive and roll. His gun tracked her movements, the shots felling thralls, but leaving the figure in the black body glove unscathed. Coming out of her roll, Zula swung the pistol around, but her shot only dispatched more of the mindless slaves.
"And what do you know of the Dark Angels, traitor?"
Balthazar's shadow fell across Zula, and she threw herself to one side as he opened up with his storm bolter. The shield of walking corpses continued to do their job. Gobbets of shredded dead flesh, all that hit Corpulax.
"This one's not too bright, is he? Or maybe the vengeance has literally blinded him."
Corpulax opened up a channel through the plague zombies to allow Balthazar a good look at him. The Deathwing hesitated for a fraction of a second, his rate of fire faltering as he saw the Plague Lord clearly for the first time.
"That's right. We were once brothers, you and I. You could almost say we were legion, couldn't you?"
Balthazar's fire intensified, but his shots were wayward. It looked to Zula as if the Deathwing was enraged, fighting angry.
"Don't worry. Your dirty little secrets are safe with me."
Corpulax waved his skeletal hand again, this time making a claw as he did so. Every plague zombie in a 50-meter radius broke off from swarming Imperial guardsmen or clogging up tank treads and converged on the Dark Angel and Junior Interrogator.
"But you'll soon be taking yours to the grave, brother."
Balthazar drew his power sword and swung it in a wide arc. Heedless to the danger, the mindless thralls walked onto his blade while others of their kind were shredded by his storm bolter. Zula drew her combat knife and stabbed away at the cloying mass one-handed, her plasma pistol glowing and dangerously close to overheating in the other. Arms and legs and heads parted company with their owners in a storm of carnage. Yet the throng did not abate. The corpulent black armoured figure moved among his servants, a pathway opening before him, then closing just as quickly in his wake. The bolter hung at his side, the mind-controlled crowd his weapon of choice now. As he drew closer to the beleaguered pair, he raised his fleshless hand.
"His hand! Don't let it touch you!"
Zula yelled, straining her vocal cords to be heard over the incessant din of battle. In a blur of steel and energy, Balthazar brought his power sword upwards, tearing through any plague zombie unfortunate enough to be in its way before making contact with Corpulax's wrist. The Plague Lord threw his head to the sky and let out a howl, its moist bass momentarily drowning out the sound of artillery fire and demonic chatter. Balthazar's sword died in his hand, the energy field sputtering and dissipating. Even devoid of power, the blade's sharp edges were lethal, carving up undead as the Dark Angel tried to press home his advantage and plough through the tightly packed bodies to reach Corpulax. Although his hand had been severed, the Plague Marine retained control of the horde, rotting forms moving into position behind him to cover his escape. Balthazar fought relentlessly to reach the traitor, smashing thralls out of the way with his fists and the pummel of his sword, but it was all in vain. For every meter of ground he won, Corpulax drew ever closer to the safety of Attica. The vox speed in Zula's ear awoke. It was Azrael's voice.
"All forces pull back. There are too many of them. We're going to blast them from orbit."
Still slashing and firing, she started to retreat, but halted when she realized that Balthazar was still heading in the opposite direction.
"You heard, Lord Azrael. We're retreating so the Horde can be bombed from space. You have to move. Now!"
The Dark Angel stopped, nonchalantly swinging an elbow and taking the heads from a pair of zombies who had ventured too close to him. Away in the distance, the red and white chapter symbol of the Consecrators stark against the black of his relic armour, Corpulax was swallowed up by the darkness of Attica.
"Balthazar!"
Zula urged. Tanks reversed past her at speed, clearing the way for the Space Marines and Guardsmen following behind. sheathing his sword. Balthazar turned and ran after the junior interrogator, the deep blue of a twilight sky already streaked by white contrails, heralding the death to come.